share in the National Assembly. And secondly, the fact that this government here that's fallen did not reflect what voters actually expressed at the polls earlier this summer.
So Barnier is a former EU official. He's been forced to step down as prime minister. The president says he's going to name a new prime minister. Can you talk about who exactly he's talking to? You have everyone from Marine Le Pen on the far right to Mathilde Panot, leader of the left-wing France Unbowed party. And Marine Le Pen, who now faces a verdict in a criminal embezzlement case in the next months, which could potentially make her ineligible to run for office for years. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And that also might be part of the reason why there's calls to move to a presidential election in certain parts of the far right. But you know, the key issue here is we still have the same mathematical problem that we had after the elections this summer, which is how do you find a prime minister that's able to get enough support in the National Assembly, or that's able to at least withstand a motion of no confidence. So you have to get someone who cannot have 289 members of the National Assembly vote against them. That's really the goal here. And the question is Macron going to basically try to do the same thing that he did this summer, which is to say, I'm going to turn to the right and de facto let the National Rally be the one that's going to decide whether or not to let to have the government stand or not? Or is he going to turn to the left? That's what the members of the National, the New Popular Front, the left-wing coalition have been calling for. But to be quite frank, Amy.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch and snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign. Now through December 31st.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurai and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of The Global Cell, which airs live in the air room the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. I host immigrants and refugees from various global spots. I like to bring out their lived experiences so the world can know something about them. I like to bring a lot through my guests so we may have diverse experiences, cultures, foods, music, interests, and anything on the platform. We can share and learn a lot through their live instructions. Let's do this together, not only for a better platform for our community, but a better community for our platform. Again, tune in for my show, The Global Cell, live in the air room, the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and also available on the web at kboo.fm.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Portland city government is changing, and the old guard is getting the new city council ready.
The new police oversight system is a hot topic for Portland's newest elected officials.
And Commissioners Dan Ryan and Carmen Rubio try to get a Zenith permit passed before their term runs out.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, December 6th, 2024. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. For many people, December is the holiday season, a time to slow down, unwind, and connect with friends and family. But for Portland leaders, it's a season of go, go, go. Portland's new form of government and new leaders will take control starting in January. The elected city councilors will be in onboarding for the next few weeks, getting up to speed before they're sworn in on January 2nd. KBOO's Althea Billings reports.
It's 27 days until Portland's new form of government and newly elected leadership are in effect. A lot of work has gone into the transition since 2022, when voters passed the charter change measure that put this governmental transformation into motion. Mayor Ted Wheeler spoke about these changes in a press conference Thursday.
The city of Portland was tasked what at the time we thought was an incredibly tall order. First, to establish four geographic districts with three council members elected to represent each of the districts, expanding our city council from 5 to 12 members. Second, we were to allow voters to rank candidates in order of their preference using a unique ranked choice voting system. Third, we were to establish a city council that focused on setting policy and engaging directly with members of the community and transitioning day-to-day oversight of our bureaus to a citywide elected mayor and a professional city administrator. We've been piloting this new form of government since July 1st of this year, when I consolidated all of our city bureaus under interim city administrator Mike Jordan, who in turn reports to me. And this fall, we implemented the new ranked choice voting tools as Portland voters elected 12 commissioners and their new mayor.
Mike Jordan is the interim city administrator. He says the transition process has been smooth so far.
You know, I've been doing this for, this year will be 4 decades, and have been able to work in a lot of different venues in local government and at state government and regional government. And I have never gone through a transition in any of those organizations as wide and deep and complex as this has been. And I also believe perhaps the most successful transition, if I may be so bold, that I've been involved in.
Mayor-elect Keith Wilson has been a part of the transition team since his election in November. He says he will keep interim city administrator Jordan on staff until at least next fall. Wilson emphasized his priorities with the new system of government, which puts him at the head of the city's bureaucracy, overseeing city services.
Our new city councilors are the best in Portland, and I'm excited about my role executing the vision, leadership, and the legislation they'll bring in the coming days. We are not going to sideline our efforts on public safety, supporting families and small businesses, or leading on climate. Our first critical mission to shape the future of Portland will be to end unsheltered homelessness in our city. It's a humanitarian crisis, it's a financial crisis, and a crisis of confidence wrapped up into one. Our mission is to rebuild a sense of civic pride and personal safety so that people can thrive and vibrancy returns to our public spaces.
But with this government transition, there's still a lot of unknowns, particularly in the legislative branch of city government. The city council will have to elect a president, decide on committees, and how they will conduct themselves. City council will also be looking at a budget shortfall. Mayor-elect Wilson says the crunch is coming, but there is hope to avoid layoffs through savings. Since the city bureaus are united under one roof for the first time, there are some overlapping costs that could be consolidated. The final meeting of Portland's commission form of government and the current city council will be on Wednesday, December 18th, in the newly renovated council chambers. The new mayor and city council will be sworn in 2 weeks later, on Thursday, January 2nd, 2025. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings.
Another big topic on the radar as the city moves into a new form of government is the transition to a new police oversight system. KBOO's Jasmine Moss and Sam Bauman have more.
Asked them if they had met to discuss the transition to Portland's new civilian police accountability system. Wilson said that they had just met to discuss it on Wednesday. Wheeler took the opportunity to point out that because of a federal judge's ruling, the rollout of the new system has been pushed back until January, when the new city government will be in power. This has put a lot of pressure on the new council to make this transition work and do it quickly.
Time is of the essence. We have been relying on people, for example, in IPR, staying in those positions long enough for us to make the transfer to the new police accountability system. And we are really, at this point, both appreciative of and beholden to those individuals for staying in place until the new police accountability system is up and running. So this will have to be an urgent priority for the new city council as they convene in January. They're going to have to hit the ground running on this.
It's not just city staff that is at loose ends, but citizen volunteers as well.
The Citizen Review Committee, or CRC, has been a vital component of the police accountability landscape in Portland for over 20 years. The all-volunteer body is under the umbrella of the Independent Police Review, and the majority of their public work has involved hearing appeals of IPR findings in police misconduct cases. In recent years, CRC members have been regularly filling civilian spots on the Police Review Board and are responsible for reviewing huge case files for officer-involved shootings and deadly force cases. As CRC Chair Yume Delgado mentions, this is a huge task for these volunteers.
What you see here represents a very small fraction of what the work of this body. As we move into a world with body-worn camera footage, with drone footage, with robot footage, with all of that kind of stuff, there is a lot more to take in. And I think for officer-involved shootings, there is a lot more to process, and I think that can be a real burden for our membership.
Voters approved the new Police Accountability Board in 2020, and after several years of planning and preparation via a volunteer citizen commission, the city cut the commission's comprehensive proposal down to a bare-bones code package that intentionally left a lot of room for the council to make decisions that should have been made by the public. When the city presented the pared-down proposal to Judge Simon, against the wishes of many community groups, Simon balked and decided that while he couldn't force the city to change the proposal, he could give the power to implement it to the new council. This has not been a wholly popular decision, and it has left the outgoing system in limbo without a full staff or full support from the city. Here is CRC Chair Yume Delgado again.
So I think that's a real existential crisis, and I think more than that, being frank, I think it is at this point not honoring the will of the voters or the commitments that we have made to our volunteers and to our city staff.
This council's work on the new Police Accountability Board has been stalled by federal Judge Simon. He has disqualified this city council from appointing the nomination committee that would in turn nominate the members of that commission. There's work that commission has to do, for example, actually hiring the professional investigative staff. It is all on hold.
When the transition to the new system kicks off next year, KABU will continue to track its progress. For KABU Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Jasmine Moss.
The Zenith Oil Company got a big smackdown today by the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. The fossil fuel multinational company must pay a fine of $372,000 for using a dock to ship fuel without authorization from the state for the past 3 years. More importantly, though, the DEQ has rejected the Portland City permit signed off by Commissioners Dan Ryan and Carmen Rubio. DEQ officials say the permit was incomplete. It now mandates that Zenith must go back to the Portland City Council for its land use permit to continue to ship oil on industrial trains through Portland city limits. Zenith has to get approval from the city by February 4th, 2025, the filing deadline. In March of this year, Zenith was fined by the Portland City Auditor for not registering as a lobbyist when their staff met secretly with Ryan and Rubio to hammer out the permit now rejected by the state. Zenith was also fined $25,000 in 2021 for violating air quality standards. This issue will most likely get resolved by the incoming new city council since there are just 27 days left until they take office, but it's unclear whether they will be as easy for Zenith to convince as their predecessors.
The Senate Indian Affairs chair says a long-imprisoned activist deserves clemency. Speaker Mike Johnson says they may end funding for PBS and Planned Parenthood. And Senate Republicans privately say Hegseth's nomination is doomed. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This is what mercy is for. He poses little threat to society. If there was ever a case that merited compassionate release, Leonard Peltier's is it.
Democratic Hawaii Senator Brian Schott says it's time to let Leonard Peltier go home. The Native American activist was convicted of murdering two FBI agents in a widely criticized trial. Peltier is in failing health after more than 50 years in prison. Schott, the chair of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, says clemency from outgoing President Joe Biden could right a historic wrong. As Republicans assemble plans to slash the federal budget next year, Speaker Mike Johnson says he hopes to cut funding for PBS and Planned Parenthood.
There'll be lots of ideas that come out. We don't want to put too many of it out right now, okay? But this is part of that, preparing the playbook to unleash and unroll in January.
Johnson met with billionaire Elon Musk and former presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy on Capitol Hill. The co-leaders of the newly created Department of Government Efficiency say they want to cut up to $2 trillion in spending. Florida Congressman Jared Moskowitz says he and other Democrats are willing to work with them.
Where we disagree, if it's on Social Security or Medicare, I'm going to push back. But if there's agreements because, hey, we can find hundreds of billions of dollars to save the American people, we should make that a bipartisan issue.
In the last undecided race, Democrat Adam Gray flipped a Central California House district, beating Republican incumbent John Duarte by fewer than 200 votes. Gray says he's now looking forward after his narrow victory.
I've been through this process before. You know, my focus throughout the last few weeks has simply been to make sure every vote gets counted.
And in Maine, Republican Austin Terrio has conceded to Democratic Congressman Jared Golden after early recount results showed little change in the state's ranked choice voting tally. The extremely slim Republican House majority adds importance to representatives from swing districts. President-elect Donald Trump's pick to lead the Pentagon looks unlikely to be confirmed. Fox News host Pete Hegseth is facing allegations of excessive drinking and mistreatment of women. Democrat Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut says at least 10 of his Senate Republican peers privately oppose him.
What the retribution might be, I think, is pretty daunting. And so I think Republicans are reluctant to step forward and be the first one.
Female veterans in the Senate, including Illinois Democrat Tammy Duckworth and Iowa Republican Joni Ernst, also disagree with Hegseth that women should not be allowed to serve in combat. Current Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says the military needs all the qualified troops it can get.
Any military that turns away tough, talented patriots, women or men, is just making itself weaker and smaller. So enough already.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program or any other program you listen to by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. Then at 7, it's Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather will be mostly cloudy with a low of 39 degrees, and tomorrow it will be rainy with a high of 47 degrees. Showers should lighten up in the afternoon. Today in history, 8 months after the Civil War ended, the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified in 1868. It officially ended the institution of slavery, quote, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. The quote of the day is from Frederick Douglass, one of the most important figures in social reform and abolition in the 19th century. He said, quote, "Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning."
Several multicultural organizations are coming to the defense of a teenager who was suspended for the length of his hair. Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribal members protested outside the office of U.S. Senator John Barrasso in Wyoming on Thursday. And Montana county and state officials fight over who should fund law enforcement on the Flathead Reservation. With more on those stories, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Several multicultural organizations have submitted an amicus brief, or friend of the court filing, in a case involving a black family in a Houston area school district. The brief endorses Daryl George, a black high school student who supporters say was suspended from the Barbara Hills Independent School District in his junior year due to his long hair. Attorneys for the family say this violates the 2023 Texas Crown Act, which prohibits schools from discriminating against hairstyles and textures associated with race and cultural identity. Malia Jaswali is with the Native American Rights Fund, or NARF. She says with the law on the family's side, she expects George to win in Texas appellate court. Jaswali added that this case is relevant for hundreds of Native American tribes as well.
Hair is incredibly important for many Native people. Hair is deeply associated with cultural and religious beliefs. It's a symbol of moral strength. It can be a very personal choice for how a Native person wants to present themselves. We understand that students across the country, and particularly in Texas, want to be able to wear their hair long in representation of that heritage.
The Barbers Hills District has continued to defend its dress code. Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribal members protested outside of U.S. Senator John Barrasso's office in Riverton, Wyoming yesterday. Wyoming Public Radio's Chris Clements reports the protest was over the defunct Pilot Butte Power Plant, which sits on the Wind River Reservation, but is currently owned by the Bureau of Reclamation.
Last year, Barrasso filed a bill that would transfer the plant to a non-tribal irrigation district so it can be used to generate power for Fremont County. Residents of the Wind River Reservation say they were never consulted about the transfer and that they oppose it. Felicia Alvarez is Eastern Shoshone.
No more taking, no more stealing. We stole enough. They're doing this underhandedly without our consent.
Nicole Wagon is Northern Arapaho.
The Pilot Butte Conveyance Act is another in a long line of violations against the 1863-1868 Eastern Shoshone Treaties.
In an emailed response, Barrasso said he's, quote, been in contact with members of both tribes as the bill has advanced in the Senate. For National Native News, I'm Chris Clements.
There's been a fight between county and state officials in Montana over who should fund law enforcement on the Flathead Reservation. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports a state Supreme Court ruling Tuesday settled the dispute.
Lake County officials have long said taxpayers can no longer afford the $4 million price tag of providing law enforcement on tribal lands. Under a deal known as Public Law 280, the county is responsible for jailing and prosecuting tribal members accused of felony crimes. The county sued the state, arguing that because it's also part of the deal with the federal government, it bears some fiscal responsibility. A lower court ruled that it's up to state lawmakers whether they want to fund the county's law enforcement on tribal lands. State lawmakers did pass funding, but Governor Greg Gianforte vetoed the legislation. The Supreme Court agreed with the lower court and said the county can also opt out of providing law enforcement for tribal members altogether. The county did try to do that, but Gianforte refused to sign off, claiming it didn't file the proper paperwork. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios of Eugene, Oregon.
On December 3rd, Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt released the 2024 Multnomah County Corrections Grand Jury Report. Oregon state law requires an annual grand jury inquiry into the condition and management of every adult and youth correctional facility in the county. KBOO's news reporter Doug McVeigh has more on the story.
On December 3rd, Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt released the 2024 Multnomah County Corrections Grand Jury Report. Oregon state law requires an annual grand jury inquiry into the condition and management of every adult and youth correctional facility in the county. These include the Multnomah County Detention Center and the Multnomah County Inverness Jail, which are both operated by the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, the Donald E. Long Juvenile Justice Center, which is operated by the Multnomah County Department of Community Justice Juvenile Division, and the Columbia River Correctional Institution, which is operated by the Oregon Department of Corrections. Briefly from the executive summary, quote, The Multnomah County Sheriff's Office has experienced many difficult years surrounding staffing and facilities. The Multnomah County Jail system is in crisis and at risk of jeopardizing public health and safety. All stakeholders expressed frustrations with the compounding effects of the ongoing MCSO staffing shortages. The criminal justice system is also severely impacted by the shortage of court-appointed attorneys for people charged with crimes. The buildings and facilities that house Multnomah County jails, in particular MCDC, are rapidly deteriorating. They are not adequately addressing the population's mental health and substance abuse needs. End quote. The corrections grand jury made priority recommendations in the areas of staffing, mental health and substance use disorder services, transitional housing, attorney access, communication, and replacement facilities. Regarding that last item on replacement facilities, the grand jury report recommends that the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office must initiate a feasibility study to replace their two aging jails, the detention center and the Inverness Jail, quote, with a goal of identifying a location that could consolidate operations into one facility, end quote. A copy of the full Multnomah County Corrections Grand Jury report is available via the Multnomah County DA Office's website. That URL is mcda.us. Reporting for KABU News, I'm Doug McVeigh.
Oregon is one of 11 sanctuary states that don't require local law enforcement agencies to enforce federal immigration law. These laws may offer more protection to Oregon's significant immigrant population, but people who may need them are being urged to learn more. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
As word has spread about President-elect Donald Trump's mass deportation plans, advocates for immigrants in Oregon are working to educate people about their rights. Oregon has the longest-standing sanctuary laws in the nation, and they prevent local and state law enforcement from working with federal immigration authorities without a signed order from a judge. Johanna Costa with the Oregon Department of Justice notes while undocumented residents have greater protection in Oregon, these laws are not foolproof.
Oregon's sanctuary law does not stop deportations from occurring. It does not stop federal prosecutions for crimes like unlawful reentry.
While they don't block federal immigration authorities like ICE from operating in the state, Costa says Oregon is the only state in the country that offers a hotline to report violations of the sanctuary laws. Oregon is also the only state tracking and making this data public. Some 90,000 legal Oregon residents currently live with a family member who is undocumented. Costa recommends they learn their rights and make a plan with their family for what to do if immigration officials come to their home or stop them on the street.
We're not naive to the possibility of what could happen, and we don't want to fearmonger and tell folks this is coming, but we also want folks to be prepared.
Research shows undocumented immigrants are a boon to Oregon's economy, paying over $350 million in state and local taxes this year. Alonzo Oliveros with Oregon Project Voice educates immigrant communities about their rights and works with faith and other allied groups to organize against deportation.
Immigrants have always been used as a political scapegoat, so we really need to be better prepared in terms of how to defend our community, how to advocate for them.
To report a suspected violation of sanctuary laws, receive support, or be connected to resources, people can start by visiting the Oregon Department of Justice website. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
President Biden is considering preemptively pardoning those who the White House fears President-elect Donald Trump might target. As White House lawyers evaluate the possibilities, no decisions have been made, and it is possible Biden will do nothing at all. Pardons have historically been given to those accused of specific crimes, usually those who have already been convicted of a specific offense. But the president is considering issuing them for those who have not been charged or even investigated as a protection. Trump and his allies have frequently boasted of compiling enemies lists and exacting retribution. The president-elect could launch investigations that would harm reputations and be financially costly, even if the victims don't go to jail. A president's pardon power is absolute, but these preventative pardons would represent a significant expansion of how the privilege can be deployed. President Gerald Ford granted a, quote, full, free, and absolute pardon in 1974 to his predecessor, President Richard Nixon, regarding the Watergate scandal. The decision generated significant controversy, though some opponents, like famous journalists Bernstein and Woodward, have since come out approving the move. These preemptive pardons would follow Biden's recent decision to pardon his son, Hunter, for any potential federal offense committed over an 11-year period. He apparently phrased the pardon this way in case Trump allies would seek to prosecute his son in the future. Trump has talked about, quote, enemies from within, and circulated social media posts to call for the jailing of President Biden, Vice President Harris, former Vice President Mike Pence, and Senators Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer. He also promoted a social media post that suggested he wanted military tribunals against former Republican Representative Liz Cheney for supposed acts of treason. Recipients of a preemptive Biden pardon could include Dr. Anthony Fauci. Fauci played a major role in combating the coronavirus pandemic. He has become an outcast to conservatives angry about mask and vaccine mandates. Other possibilities include witnesses in Trump's criminal and/or civil trials. Some former officials have already reached out to the White House, seeking some sort of protection from the future Trump administration. The Supreme Court ruled this year that Trump enjoys broad immunity from prosecution for official acts. It is possible that he could use the promise of a blanket pardon to encourage his allies to take actions they might otherwise be afraid to commit. Richard Painter, who served as the top White House ethics lawyer under President George W. Bush, said, quote, there could be blatant illegal conduct over the next 4 years, and he can go out and pardon his people before he leaves office. But if he's going to do that, he's going to do that anyway, regardless of what Biden does, end quote.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Lisa Loving, Althea Billings, Jasmine Moss, Sam Bowman, Doug McVeigh, and Josh Salem. The producer is Eliza Yurkov. That's me. I don't know why I mispronounced my own name. And our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Catherine Carley, and Brian Bull. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River.